Case number 213653, Laborers International Union of North America, Local 860 versus Dres Neff et al. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Oakley, you may proceed for the appellant.
Good morning.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Austin Opalich, counsel for Laborers International Union of North America, Local 860, and on behalf of its members. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. This case, at its core, concerns Local 860's attempt to vindicate and secure rights taken by the juvenile court through its unilateral repudiation of the party's contracts. This case reaches you on appeal from the Northern District of Ohio, where the trial court dismissed each of Local 860's claims on 12B6 motion. We are requesting this honorable court address the following four issues from the district court findings. First, the district court erred in awarding 11th Amendment immunity to the juvenile court and official capacity defendants. Second, the district court wrongly determined that 42 U.S.C. 1983 does not give rise to contracts clause claims. Third, the district court erred in finding that prospective injunctive relief is unavailable in the takings context. And finally, the district court errantly applied qualified immunity to defendants Neff and O'Malley in their personal capacities. Local 860 asks this court to review and reverse each of these determinations and that the case be remanded to the trial court, allowing for discovery.
Should we start with the sovereign immunity? Do you want to start with that?
Yes, sir.
So one thing that really helps you is that the county is on the hook for the judgment, right? So that helps you a lot, and you know it's a pretty important factor. But it's still part of the juvenile courts are still part of the Ohio court system, arguably part of the state constitution's court system. I mean, could the county get rid of the juvenile courts? I mean, how much authority does the county have over the juvenile courts?
My understanding is that the county could not, in and of itself, get rid of the juvenile court. However, the interpretation that the court and the court system altogether is part of that state court as defined by the state has, you know, is one third of one half of that analysis. You know, rightfully stated, the most important factor in the arm of the state analysis is where that money is coming from.
Is the reason that the county couldn't get rid of the juvenile courts the Ohio Constitution?
That's my understanding, yes, sir.
Just doesn't that seem pretty significant?
Certainly, but my understanding is that the county couldn't just eliminate the entirety of its county government either. Same with municipalities and the other entities that were similarly created under the Ohio Constitution. And while that is important in that second factor of the arm of the state analysis, I think that there are also two other important factors, which are that all of the funding is coming from the county itself and not from the state. And
isn't even that, though, not that discretionary? Isn't some of that required by state law?
Yes, there is a requirement that it is that the money is coming from the county per state law. But even state law separately and distinctly created the juvenile court from all of the other state court entities, with all of the other state entities within the court system. And, you know, at the very least, I think that the trial court was required to review those factors in the analysis and
make. You agree the Court of Common Pleas, like the Cuyahoga County Court of Common Pleas, that would get sovereign immunity, right?
Yes, sir.
That one. So why are they penalized or why do they lose the immunity when they create some subject matter courts like domestic relations or juvenile? Well,
The juvenile court actually predated the Cuyahoga County Common Pleas Court and was afterwards incorporated into it.
Maybe that proves they have more immunity.
I'm not going to argue that that's not important, sir. But what I would say is that where arms of the state are part of that, and including the parts of the state court system, do receive sovereign immunity. We're talking about arms. Here, to continue kind of the...
You're going to say fingers, the metaphor?
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'm sorry. They are more akin to fingers as opposed to the arm of the state. This is a subset of the Common Pleas Court, and just like other subsets and municipalities, other corporations within the state of Ohio that were created by the state, that are state entities under state law, not all of them do require sovereign immunity, and many of them should not get sovereign immunity.
What's your best authority that the juvenile court is not an arm of the state? Can you cite to me a decision by another circuit court, one of our courts, any court? What's your best authority?
I think that our best authority lies in a couple different places. I think that in this particular context, the juvenile court is actually an employer of county employees. And in that context, both this circuit as well as the 11th Circuit have found that that it is relevant to the arms of the state analysis, and that supervision can be considered at least.
Does the authority go so far as to say that employment of county workers affects the status as an arm of the state, or just say it's? Do you have anything that's more definitive than what you just said?
Other county employees would. County employees are clearly not part of the arm. Are not arms of the state. And in this particular context,
I guess I'm asking as to what extent that affects the employing entity, and how exactly.
I believe that it at least needs to be considered in the arm of the state analysis.
Do you have a case that I can look at that supports your position? I guess that's what I'm asking. I couldn't find any cases that go your way.
There are not any cases that are looking directly at the at a Ohio court that has been found to be not part of the state.
How about a court in another state?
Not a court, but we have found them within the 11th that have that are looking at employees for detention systems and things of that nature.
Similarly, that's like the SJ case, Hamilton County.
Yes, that's correct, sir.
No, that's Ohio. We're getting warmer.
Sure, and there are. Multiple entities where there are juvenile court facilities within the state of Ohio that are run through the court systems and those juvenile courts. The remainder of them, however, are run by their individualized counties.
I do think that's a helpful case because it shows there's a functional component of this. But in that case, the workers really were doing something, the prison system, which was quite distinct from the court system, even though court systems work with prison systems.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so that seems, that's the bridge you've got to cross.
Certainly. And, even in that particular case, the court system was still, or the court itself is still distinguishable from the Cuyahoga County Court, which, you know, was a separately created entity is a different is different under the law and was something that we believe should be considered in this analysis. Were there any other questions on that particular issue? I'm sorry.
No, but you're fine. You can keep this 2 minutes and use it on rebuttal if you like. We're pretty flexible.
I'd also like to move ahead to the takings portion. I think that that's most important for our case. In that context, we don't necessarily believe that the the trial court dismissed the claim on generalized case law, as well as an allegation that federal courts are not open when there's adequate state process. We believe that that general does not apply in this particular context. And
One thing that's interesting to me about your claim is calling what looks like a breach of contract claim a takings claim. You know, takings you think of as eminent domain, and this just looks, you know, it rises out of a union agreement. It obviously is breach of contract. You have an impairment of contract claim, so you're not going to disagree with that.
Certainly.
Are there cases that say you can take a breach of contract and call it a takings?
There are, but in this case, breach of contract is not actually open to the we don't have that availability. We actually would be required under state law and federal to go through the arbitration process. But to answer your question directly.
Just to pause on that point, there's a reason you have to go through the arbitration process, and that's because it was agreed by the union and the employees that that would be the method of dispute resolution. That's certainly not an impairment of contract.
But the impairment in this case would have been the complete repudiation of that contract and all of the rights they're under. While takings claims are generally in the property context, as you stated, they also have been applied to both the personal property context and to intangible properties as well, sir.
All right, you'll get your full rebuttal. Thank you very much. We'll hear from the other side. Mr. Riker or Reeker?
Reeker, Your Honor.
Reeker. All right. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honors. Again, my name is Max Reeker, representing the Cuyahoga County Court of Common Pleas Juvenile Division, Ms. Neff and Judge O'Malley. Before I begin, I'd like to take a moment to introduce my client, Judge Thomas O'Malley, the administrative judge of that court. If I may proceed.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. We view the issues that are before you as fairly straightforward. Chief Judge Sutton, I think you hit the nail right on the head with the concept that this is really a breach of contract case, and that is precisely what Local 860 made.
Let's go to the sovereign immunity point. I mean, there's some case law and language in our cases that says who pays the judgment is the key factor. We have an older case that almost makes it seem like it's the factor. And here the county does pay the judgment.
Yes, Your Honor. So if Local 860 wants to get where it desires to go here and have this court breathe new life into this litigation by overturning the district court's opinion dismissing the case, it needs to overturn Mumford. It needs to overturn Kaminsky. But in the sovereign immunity context, Your Honor, I think where you're going with this is the Alkire case. And I think what's interesting is, yes, Alkire says that a very important factor, perhaps the most important factor in the arm of the state analysis in this context, is who pays. However, there are a number of cases that have come after Alkire that stand for the proposition that courts in Ohio do still enjoy sovereign immunity. And what's interesting in this case is the district court, you know, they didn't misapply the standard. The district court looked at Alkire. The district court cited Alkire, analyzed it, and came to the conclusion that even in light of Alkire, there are a number of factors that are exceptionally important in determining that, and consistent with other Sixth Circuit case law, that yes, the juvenile court is an arm of the state. Yes, the juvenile court does enjoy sovereign immunity. And you know the factors, it's been well briefed, but perhaps most importantly, if there's a vacancy on the juvenile court, who fills that vacancy? It's not the Cuyahoga County Executive. In a city, if it's a municipal court, the mayor doesn't fill the vacancy, the governor does. As you correctly pointed out, Chief Judge Sutton, that these are entities that were created by the Ohio Constitution. There's mandatory funding under the revised code of Ohio that requires the county to provide funding, but that's just about it. The chief judge of the juvenile court is the appointing authority. These are not county employees. If they were county employees, then the Ohio Collective Bargaining Act would permit mandatory collective bargaining of these employees, but it doesn't. And these are very squarely court employees, not county employees. So,
is there a case where the non-state entity paid the judgment, and we, still said there was sovereign immunity?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. I'm not aware of a case that stands for that proposition. And frankly, the cases that this court has analyzed, for instance, Ward versus Norwalk, a Sixth Circuit case from 2016. There was a municipal court case in that particular situation. That was post-Alkire. The court analyzed the situation and came to the conclusion that the municipal court was an arm of the state. And that same analysis applies here. And again, Ward versus City of Norwalk was a component of the district court's analysis in this case. So the juvenile court's argument here is that the district court did fully flesh this out, and there's really no need for any additional analysis on remand. There's no need for a remand based on.
How about this impairment of contract? It seems so strange that you can't bring a 1983 claim for, classic individual rights constitutional violation. Doesn't that seem odd?
Other circuits have found that, Your Honor.
Have found it odd, yes, right? So,
But the law of the Sixth Circuit, flowing through Kaminsky, does hold. And Kaminsky was just, that was issued less than 5 years ago. And interestingly, Kaminsky, after it was decided, the losing appellant in that case filed a petition for en banc review, and this court denied that. So there's really, in the juvenile court's mind, no reason to revisit Kaminsky. And as I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, if this case is to go back to the district court, it's our view that the Sixth Circuit would have to effectively overturn Kaminsky.
Well, we can't do that unless we're en banc. I mean,
Your Honor, we agree completely.
That's just a given. That's just a given. So, we have to follow it unless we en banc it.
And I think that's the real problem with what Local 860 is asking this court to do.
I think that's well settled.
So, but on the, going back to the 11th Amendment immunity prong, Your Honors, there are a number of factors. Alkire announces that who pays.
Paying the judgment's only one of many factors, and even if it's an important factor, it's not dispositive, and I recognize that. And the other factors, I think, on the whole, favor your position, and one factor doesn't make it all. That's
exactly, Your Honor. We agree completely. So why should Kaminsky be upheld? I think that
we don't have to go back to Kaminsky.
Okay.
You want to talk about something else?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
You really don't have to.
It's a good idea.
You sometimes actually can just sit down and
Just trying to be thorough.
You don't have to use all your time.
All right, sir. Well, there are a few things that did come up on the first portion of oral argument that I think do bear some additional discussion. With respect to any distinction between the Court of Common Pleas General Division and the Court of Common Pleas Juvenile Division or Domestic Relations Division or Probate Division, these are distinctions without a difference for purposes of the analysis before this court. These are all courts of common pleas. Yes, there are specialty prongs within those courts of common pleas, but for an arm of the state analysis, there's no difference between the Juvenile Court of Common Pleas and the General Division Court of Common Pleas. And I'm aware of absolutely no authority that stands for the proposition that the juvenile court is on an island unto itself and subject to a lack of sovereign immunity. And you know, the breach of contract, well, the takings portion of this case, Chief Justice Sutton, you're absolutely right. This is a breach of contract case. There is a collective bargaining agreement. These are all state court animals that Local 860 is trying to bring into this context through a Section 1983 analysis. But you know, it's just not appropriate in our view. Thank you, Your Honors.
Yeah, thanks very much. Appreciate it. All right, we have a few minutes of rebuttal.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just a couple of points based on what Max just stated there. As far as the Contracts Clause claim, there is also authority within this circuit, the case of Michigan State AFL-CIO versus Shute, which was also a 2017 case that offered a Contracts Clause claim, at least at the injunctive relief portion of that case.
It allowed 1983? Is that what you're
saying? It did, yes. It found that there was a 1983 claim, at least upon injunctive relief. So
keep going.
So our thoughts, that would be an exception to the generalized Sykes v. Anderson rule that there was a case that was not considered in Kaminsky that is actually standing for the opposite proposition at that point.
Was Kaminsky argued and the Carter case argued?
Kaminsky came after about 1 month afterwards.
Was Carter invoked? Did anyone mention Carter to the court?
Carter was invoked in that case.
Said there was an exception for injunctive release cases?
Correct. Mm-hmm. That case did at least provide an injunctive relief for the plaintiff in that case.
Remind me the name of it again?
It was Michigan State AFL-CIO.
Oh, shooting. Right, okay.
Correct.
Right.
Yes, sir. Going back to the...
Just general principle of injunctive relief is that you're only entitled to equity if you have no adequate remedy of law. And how do you not have an adequate remedy here in damages?
I would say that the... Frankly, we asked for in both of our claims equitable relief, and you know, the arguments that are kind of being espoused by the juvenile court on all fronts here are that that equitable relief is either unavailable or that the equitable relief under the contract in state court is number one not available, but also we wouldn't be entitled to it. So the fact is that, you know, we're kind of pigeonholed into a corner on both our Contracts Clause and Takings Clause claims because, you know, some of this prior precedent saying it is unavailable and there are There are state court remedies. However, none of those remedies are actually available to Local 860 in this case. And as our pleadings have indicated, Can I finish that thought? Or?
Yes, go ahead.
You know, as our pleadings indicated, and frankly, in our mind, as the law indicates, we have sufficiently pled and can show that there are adequate to both takings and contracts clause claims here.
I just want to make sure in the Schutte case we're on the same page. You're saying our court did acknowledge that this was that was a 1983 action, or it was silent as to whether it was a 1983 action? I thought it was silent. I thought there was no discussion of the point you're raising today, which means it wouldn't count as a precedent that would control today if the issue we're debating wasn't discussed there.
That may be the case, Your Honor. Okay. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't believe that 1983 was in the opinion, sir.
All right, but those are four numbers that would have helped. Yeah. All right. Thanks to both of you for your arguments. We appreciate it. The case will be submitted, and the clerk may call the next case.